to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal industry. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. So it has been a year since the official launch of Case Texas Co-Counsel, generative AI legal research tool, and a research tool that was not just the first to market, but one that many of my colleagues still say is the best AI legal research tool that is out there. So in order to mark this anniversary, we have asked our longtime friend and I think guest number two,
yeah,
right after Zena Applebaum, who are now working together, by the way, we asked Pablo Arredondo, who is the vice president of Co-Counsel, and many of us remember as the co-founder of Casetex. We asked him to come back onto the show and talk to us about this anniversary. So, Pablo, welcome back to The Geek in Review.
Guys, thank you so much for having me back. Great to be here.
So, Pablo, you and Jake Heller and Laura Satfi, and the rest of the team there at Casetex were always known as these trailblazers. And, you know, when it came to legal research advancements, in fact, you always seemed to be like the very first one to market with all these great ideas. And then everyone would come in behind and copy those.
So. Yeah. And this, there's no difference when it came to applying generative AI functionality to legal research when you launched Co-Counsel on, let's see, it was March 1st, 2023. So, you know, take us back, if you don't mind, to the war room at Casetex and your decision to jump into the deep end of Gen AI and how you and the Casetex team were able to get Co-Counsel launched so quickly.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's just crazy to think it's only been a year since it came out. And, you know, for us, the dive into generative AI or these large language models actually goes back a few years. You know, I was on your guys, I was in here with you guys, I think April of 2021, talking about, oh, all the things you can do with search by using neural nets and language models, you know, using precursors like BERT, right? These earlier models. And so we kind of fell in love with these things very early on because we saw that they could allow this whole new level of interacting with information where you weren't suffering from what I theatrically call the tyranny of the keyword, right? For the first time, the system had language encoded in such a way that it could get the gist to kind of understand the meaning, even if there was no overlap. And so, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, you guys had such, you know, sort of vision to see where this, you know, the truth is like, we didn't have to take a lot on faith. Like we were seeing this stuff create a tremendous amount of value right away, right from our earliest applications of doing it. And what sort of changed everything was September 16th, 2022. So about, you know, 6 months before the actual launch of Co-Counsel is when Jake and I, under an NDA, saw the first demo of GPT-4. And that was one of the craziest weeks of my life. I mean, we were given access to a Slack channel where literally the Slack channel was like just being able to call GPT-4 and ask questions. And remember, this is 6 weeks before ChatGPT had come out. Nobody had seen any of this stuff at all, you know, outside of the folks working on it. And we immediately saw that it was this qualitative leap and that it could do so much more than what we had seen before, much more than we expected. Even our, you know, our brightest AI scientists at the company were sort of like, damn, like this is actually happening. Well, it was not a given. And so, you know, we pivoted the entire company to doing it, to focusing on it. And that's where startups kind of have sometimes an advantage, which is we can be nimble like that, right? It's relatively easy for us to pivot the entire company. And what's so great about that, you know, every team at the company had something to do, right? You know, how do you market these now? These things that make people afraid sometimes. And how do you, we're branding it, this mysterious black box AI. And then sometimes we had to create new teams like the, you know, quality control and trust team who can evaluate these to see if it's actually working the way it's intended to work and to do the kind of control on that. And so what we had in beta, and then some of you guys have seen this, right, was a much broader set of skills than what we actually launched with, right? Part of what we did is we pruned down to just those skills that had, you know, passed muster. And legal research, I think, was, you know, absolutely sort of the anchor tenant, if you will, for a few reasons. One, it's such a great way to show off the power of these language models that it's able to understand the nuance of an input into the system and the nuance of the cases that come back. Now, not infallible, certainly, but doing it well enough that Well, let me put it this way. You know, I was a co-author on the GPT-4 passes the bar paper. And I was like, that's cool. It's neat. It's a very cool milestone kind of marketing. But what really convinced me this was real was when the law librarian community didn't rip it to shreds, right? And they said things, and I may have said this before, but, you know, they called it solid. That is the most gushing praise I've ever heard from a law librarian, right? So
it's true.
When suddenly this thing was actually, and again, not infallible by any stretch, but, you know, like able to handle that in a way that law librarians were saying, it's actually doing the thing. To me, I was like, wow, this is actually happening. And the other thing with legal research is there weren't as many security concerns, right? Security and privacy is obviously a huge part of any time you're practicing law. And while I think some of the most exciting use cases for this technology is uploading your own documents, right? We were talking before we started about, you know, pointing it at all of the documents in your litigation, the transcripts, the correspondence, discovery, et cetera. That, you know, you have to go through some hoops on security for folks to feel comfortable doing that. Whereas with legal research, it was like, you know, here's the case law. Have at it. And so we launched with legal research, the ability to create your own databases, some skills around contract analysis and, you know, does this contract comply, some depo prep, you know, sort of this sort of battery of different skills. And, you know, what more testament to how different it's been than the venue we chose to launch it on, which was Morning Joe on MSNBC. And I will never forget the faces of the hosts as here come sleep deprived Jake and I, though Jake was covering it a lot better than I was, carrying a laptop. And they're like, you see them like hitting the security button under the desk, like, who are these people that think that they're going to come on national TV and demo a legal tech product? And it was like very, and it's just been wild. I mean, it's just been such an amazing year. Just on all fronts.
Yeah. I just remember it because Pablo was wearing a tie.
Yeah.
And it was one of the few times I think I'd seen you wearing a tie.
Right. Although jeans, because I'm like, they're only going to see me. I wore jeans because I'm like, they're only going to see above the table. But then they have this shot where it's like, nope, he's wearing jeans. Anyway, I tried.
That was very startup of you.
Yeah, that's how they knew you were a startup. So, well, you know, you kind of mentioned this with the library, the law librarians themselves kind of jumping in and seeing this as a big advancement. But it wasn't just the libraries. Marlene and I have talked for the past, 18 months on this, that we have never seen the legal industry, especially big law and even Fortune 500 legal departments, just absolutely move as quickly as they have with this advancement in legal tech when it comes to generative AI. So, as you were taking this new tool, this kind of crazy thought of the technology can understand language and not just the, not just the keywords. How surprised were you with the reaction that you were getting when you were showing the product?
So the 6 weeks where we were showing it to people under NDA before they had seen ChatGPT at all was some of the strangest experiences I've ever had, full stop, with like a fellow human being, because they were going from like zero to suddenly seeing, and there's something, language is kind of uniquely human. There's something a little unnerving about seeing a machine have language. And, immediately their minds went to Cyberdyne, the Terminator scenarios, to sort of the end of legal practice. And we'll perhaps later talk about that. Obviously, there was a lot of hyperbole around this stuff, early on. And that was honestly like it was beyond just legal tech. It felt like just this moment as our species was like encountering this intelligence, and to have like the chance to be the one to show that to certain people was profound. It was really an amazing moment that I don't think of in terms of normal legal tech sales, right? In terms of like the normal legal tech sales process, I mean, I'm a geek, I'm a nerd, I love you guys. The law librarians are always the one I'm trying to impress. The sales reps were very happy with how like the managing partners were reaching out to us saying the clients are asking about this. I think that's one of the huge differences, right? The clients, last decade were not asking them, what are you doing about the blind spot in current citators where it's not catching soft relationships? Certainly something like Kara, why aren't you? That was never coming from the clients, in this heated way at them, right? This is something where the public rancor around it, and ChatGPT has been a sort of mixed blessing in a way, because it was misused in so many ways, right? It had the hallucinations, like the consumer chatbot. But on the whole, what it just did is it just elevated and magnified the public discussion around this in such a way that you had something quite unusual in legal tech, which is like partners reaching out, you know, certainly to folks like yourselves, sometimes directly to us, asking, you know, we need to know what's going on here. We need to see this. So it's just such a night and day difference compared to, you know, what it's been. And while, you know, somebody would say, oh, that's how lucky these new startups that are born into this. I don't know. I think the real joy is 10 years in the old world and then experiencing this, because then you can truly, truly savor it.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on that because, you know, this was early 2023 and you mentioned hallucinations. We still almost weekly now, you know, get some story that comes out where, you know, some law firm has submitted. I guess the latest one is there was a law firm that submitted a brief to the court on how it should be paid that used ChatGPT to write the entire document on why it should structure its legal fees the way that it does. But we had some what I call March 2023 problems with the hallucinations of not understanding how to use the product. What are you seeing as like March 2024 problems that users are running into with this?
Right. Yeah. So I think that's such a great way to put it. I think, you know, initially just understanding the difference between a chatbot and using technology like, you know, that uses retrieval augmented generation, that uses these other architectures that you can really use it. That was the big problem. I think now we're at a place where some of those old friends in legal tech, like workflow and access to documents and integrations, are starting to come up a bit more, right? And more. I think now it's like, okay, when the rubber hits the road, how do we actually apply this in the real world? And I think those are solvable. And I think, you know, just as this technology caused all this fanfare with new outreach to learn about legal tech, I'm hopeful that this technology will galvanize a bunch of integrations between, you know, a lot of these systems.
Cost what remains do you think?
Oh, sorry, please.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. Sorry, I thought you were done.
Well, let's do one at a time. Don't worry, please continue.
Well, no, it's like mine is a totally different question, so finish up.
Oh. Well, then I'd say also cost is another issue. I think right now the best models are still pricey, and there's different things that are going on in that front, right? So first is a lot of people are working very hard to make them less expensive, and that is the Lord's work as far as I'm concerned. And then we're also evolving how we can do prompting to better leverage it and make it more efficient. You know, the fact that these models, it costs a lot more for them to write something down than for them to read something. Okay, well, if you know that, then you can kind of design certain flows that are less write intensive and can bring the cost down and the speed up. I think that's an issue. And then I think, yeah, you've just got this range. I mean, you guys tell me, but has there ever been a time where firms have dealt with, they open the first letter from the client and it says, you better not be using this tech. And then the next letter says, you better be using this tech. I mean, have you ever seen that before with anything? I mean, this is...
Yeah, well, it was worded differently. It said, we want you to handle all of our legal work, but we want you to do it on the cheap. But we want it to be really good. So, I mean, right. I think this is just a different application of that same. And quite frankly, I mean, it's a little off topic for this is I think that's the bad relationship between clients and law firms is they don't talk to each other. And so this is just one more tool where there's different expectations, sometimes different expectations from the same people, on how it should be applied, but how it, you know, I want you to apply it and I want you to reduce cost, but I don't want you using any of my stuff to do that. So,
right. And then relatedly, literally last one, and then I want to jump, but another 2024 problem we're seeing is like, how do we regulate this as a profession, right? Do we need new rules? Do we need new duties? And you're starting to see task force form. California released their rules, which is pretty laissez-faire. You know, California was basically like, let's go over all the rules that already exist and think to ourselves, like, these don't stop existing just because new technology is here, which generally is what I like. Contrast that, I think, with Florida, which started getting into like specifically how you should bill this back to your clients. And I think, you know, caused some quizzical eyebrows among folks as in like, what, first, why are you even purporting to tell me how to do that? Secondly, what are you saying? Does it make sense? So I think that's another thing we're going to be seeing is, you know, how do we regulate this stuff, if at all? Do we use existing rules? Do we create new ones, et cetera? Anyway, Marlene.
No, I wanted to revisit a thread that you just mentioned about sort of education and you know, where do you think it's critical, you know, in terms of education for users on these types of tools? Like what are the things that we should be focusing on most?
So yeah, education has come up again and again in different contexts. So I think let's start with law school for a moment, right? So my view is a lot of law school education is absolutely unbothered by this, right? Like the torts, the doctrines of torts or contracts, this stuff goes back to like William the Conqueror, and how you think about these relationships and these rights and sort of think analytically is not really tech specific. So I think that the danger there is just making sure that students aren't like using this stuff to write their essay and not thinking about it as rigorously as they could have, right? And that's where you might see it thing. But then for things like advanced legal research and writing or legal research and writing, of course you need this stuff to be taught, right? It's going to become just, you know, part of how you're doing it. And so I think it does need to fold in there. The problem is just getting the cost in a place where we can do it, right? It's just a lot more expensive. Then comes this more subtle stuff about the training of junior associates. And my thinking on this has evolved. So when the partners first used to say, what about all the things that they learn when they're doing that tedious work? I was like, what a shocker. The person who's billing out that guy for $700 an hour is worried about the like pedagogical cut, right? And so at first, I admit, I looked at it cynically, right? But as I think more about it, you know, when I was at Kirkland Ellis, I had no idea how corporations worked at all. I had no exposure to them, right? I didn't have family memory, right? Doing those long nights of doc review, right, whether I knew it or not, I was sort of through osmosis ingesting certain aspects about how, you know, corporations run, and those things, you know, were useful in sort of understanding litigation to some extent. So the analogy I make is sort of the Karate Kid, you know, Daniel-san, like, you know, wax on, wax off. He's got to paint, wax the car, paint the fence. And you're like, why, how can anyone learn anything? Well, it turns out that those are like components of something bigger. So I actually do think, so basically my evolution, for whatever it's worth, is to go from cynical dismissal, is like, please, you're just saying that because you want to keep billing, to realizing that there actually are some things that are learned during those tedious processes. And we need to think about, how do you just balance that out, right? How do you make sure that is still learned in those ways in a world where increasingly large language models can do like a lot of that lifting?
So the news dropped in August of 2023 that Thomson Reuters acquired Casetext. And so Greg and I have known you for a long time, and you know, we were very happy for you, yet we were a little surprised, you know, our favorite scrappy startup was being folded into the TR business. So what were your thoughts during this time, you know, as the decision was made to start working with Thomson Reuters?
Yeah, so a few things went into that. So the question is, like, why is Pablo not sad about it, right? That's what you're basically, like, indirectly saying, given, like, you know, his whole scrap grid. And the truth is, I'm not. We weren't beforehand, and now I'm really, really not. So I think a couple of things. First, the reality of you need content to point this at, right? And we had gotten as far as we could, trying our hardest to reproduce content. And whereas with our earlier technology, it was sort of annoying that we didn't have, you know, certain aspects of content. When we started showing this stuff, and again, we were the only ones who had it for a while, right? People were, you know, grabbing us by the shirt collar, holding up the wall, be like, you better get this content right now, because I need it, right? So the demands for content, you know, became so intensified. And at the same time, our maturity about what it really takes to reproduce this content, right? You know, not just the primary sources, but all the editorial stuff, right? And yes, when you're competing, we're like, nobody needs editorial stuff. Nobody needs, oh, come on. You guys are just, you're just making up that you want that administrative body. You know, really, what you want is whatever state law. You know, the truth is that, you know, it helps tremendously to have not just the primary sources, but also a lot of the stuff that's folded into it. So that's part one. And then the idea is we wouldn't just spend 10 years reinventing the wheel. We'd spend 10 years inventing like half a wheel with cracks in it that wasn't as good. So I think especially with this new technology, you just feel this mandate to go and just bring it to its best embodiment as fast as you can. I mean, this is, if you work in legal tech, this is it. This is like, you're never going to have more of an opportunity to bring good to the profession. So, you know, why not do the things that are just going to lead to that, right? And then the other thing, and this was something, you know, a little bit maybe on faith we took, but now we're seeing it realize, is that Thomson Reuters really is all in on this AI stuff. Like, they really do see co-counsel, and I think we'll talk about it in a bit, not just let's take all of our product lines and enhance them with generative AI, although by God means do that. That's a wonderful thing. But what's this new category that's going to exist where this AI assistant can follow you from surface to surface, from Microsoft Word to your DMS to your legal research, right? And that category, I think, is they believe in it enough that they, you know, paid for us. And we weren't, you know, we were cheap, right? You know, they paid for us. And we've seen everything we've seen since we've joined has been that they really do buy into that and they really are supporting that. And so those are the two reasons why I'm actually quite happy with it. And I hope in time that anyone who had any lingering doubts will see that it was a very good thing that we joined.
Yeah. And on a side note, I will say before the announcement, Marlene and I had a private conversation where we were wondering, did they miss out on being acquired? Did they wait too long? So it shows you why we're on the microphones and not actually out doing startups.
Exactly.
So, you know, but from what we're seeing and, you know, in this whole integration that, you know, it seems to be that it, you know, it's pretty smooth in integrating with, you know, the Thomson Reuters, but the rest of the platform. You know, and there are multiple generative AI tools that as users that we see moving forward. So, you know, we've got, you know, the case text path. We've got the Thomson Reuters precision path, the practical law path. I'm sure there's other big ones that we probably don't even know about. What I want to know is how do you and Mike Dane and Kriti Sharma and others who are the AI, you know, bigwigs within the company, how are you making both these separate paths work so that you all succeed, but, you know, at the same time you benefit from each other, but you continue to kind of have that case text personality as well, which seems to still be there. How do you make that work?
Well, I mean, this case text personality is just so intense. I don't know, can anything dilute it? I mean, at this point, you know,
yeah, you're influencing TR rather than TR influencing you.
Well,
right?
No, but you know, but it goes both ways though too. I mean, there's plenty that we're learning from them as well. I mean, TR has you know, a lot of experience with a lot of this stuff, and you know, actually things like, so we talked about testing a bit, right? Oh my goodness, when Thomson Reuters starts testing, it is the most beautiful, extensive, like, you know, they write up like actually what's going on, right? Which is more than we had our resources to do, right? We're choosing this kind of crude, like, does it flag and things like that. So I think the key is to take the best from both cultures and combine it together. And what I think is going to, what makes that so important and what I think will facilitate it is that we all have this vision now of this AI that kind of floats across the different product lines, right? Even product lines, those silos existed because they had to, because it was too hard to have things talk to each other. And there wasn't, you know, how much do you really gain if you do it? Well, now, thanks to this new technology, the gains are going to be tremendous. And I don't want to make it sound easy. And I know I can see all the engineers rolling their eyes like, oh, look at Pablo talking about how easy it's going to be to integrate all this stuff. You know, a lot of work goes into doing it well. But I do think that this technology also makes it a lot more feasible to have a system that could go talk to like six different platforms or products and then bring it together.
So it's not just putting a chatbot in there and making it all work?
No. I mean, but here's the thing. It's like, yeah, you want to slap AI into everything too. Don't get it makes what everything it touches better. But to reiterate, I think there's that sort of bigger picture, right? This new category of legal AI assistant. That's really where the competition is now and in where it should be. And I welcome any and all folks who are competing with us in that space, because that is going to be, I think, legal tech's biggest contribution to the practice of law is whatever comes out of this, you know, competition.
So switching gears a little bit. So just a week ago, Case Text for Canada and Australia just launched. And that's it. Just like, I'm sort of seeing a trend this way too, where, you know, we're seeing a lot more foreign, international, you know, types of access. So, how's the team adjusting to expanding the resources beyond the U.S. and what are plans for possibly additional areas?
Yeah, I mean, my colleague Laura Safdie had her over the last year. She has done like Herculean work dealing with all the contract stuff just to the United States. And now it's like, oh, joy, Laura, look, here's a globe. Do you mind can we just go ahead and get it everywhere? so a lot of, I mean, she's, you know, quickly having to learn all the regulation and get up to speed on that along with, you know, her colleagues in that area. But this is to my point, right? within months of joining forces with Thomson Reuters, our stuff is now being sent around the globe, right? So if you're sincere about wanting to do this stuff, right, do you see how that's a better path than even though you lose that kind of like scrappy individuality, which don't get me wrong, like, who doesn't love feeling that? You know, that's a good feeling. But like in terms of just actually making the world a better place, this is the kind of stuff that we can do, join forces with Thomson Reuters, where literally it would be 10 years before we got to Australia or Canada and the other world. And so, you know, there's a lot of competing regulations right now around AI, which is going to be interesting, right? England's taking one stance, the European Union's taking another. So we'll be sort of on the, we'll be affected by that. It'll be really interesting to see like what places can we go to and what places do we need to do this or that hoop. But, you know, the fundamental technology seems to work on all major languages. Although, you know, with the caveat, so we're working with Harvard's Library Innovation Lab, translating French statutes and then having experts go and look and say, like, is this capturing the nuance of it, right? Because it's one thing to translate a poem or like a birthday card or kind of, you know, generic things. What happens when you try to translate actual statutory language? And we'll be, you know, publishing something on that soon and making the translation available. But for the most part, this technology is ready to roll and ready to rock and roll in certainly every English-speaking country and a lot of non-English countries as well.
So, Pablo, let me ask you on a personal level. How's your work-life integration changed from moving from the startup? Who, you know, I would get emails from you, you know, in the middle of the night, or because you were on the West Coast and I was in Central Time. You know, I would see them in the morning, but they'd be like, you know, 3 o'clock. Are you still having the late days, or are you able to kind of take a breath and not have to answer every question that comes your way?
Yeah, I mean that's, you know, not when you're a co-founder, it's everything and anything. And I think
you wear many hats.
I mean, this last year, I don't want to glamorize it. It was tough. It was tough on my family. It was tough on, you know, I think my wife's question was like, can GPT-4 automatically divorce you from somebody and get you? startups are pretty all consuming. And then the nature of this technology, I mean, this is something where you can finish your day of work and then go see an essay about what is the impact on humanity, right? Or on the society, right? And it's also changing so quickly so that you're constantly like, oh my God, this is some new model. So it is an extremely consuming area to be working in right now. But that said, yeah, with Thomson Reuters, like it's not, you know, they're not, it's different than Case Text in terms of things that they feel that I should be directly involved in. And I welcome that as well. We have very good people handling it. Can I divert us to one? Yeah, I want to try this out with you guys and tell me what you think. So if you think about like other big moments where we harnessed stuff to then create value. So think of like oil, right? So you had millions of years of all these prehistoric little ocean animals, and then you had the force of geological pressure on that forcing it, and now we have oil, and it's like, oh my goodness, right? Nuclear power, we harnessed the atom power from like the universe, right? What these large language models are, what's so interesting to me about them is we're harnessing our own work here. What we really did was take everything ever written, all of the combined effort of anyone who wrote anything down, and then basically figured out how to like compress that into this new thing, right? And so we're harnessing our own work for the first time. And I think a lot of the issues we're having, the bias and the this and that, right? It's because now this is us. Like this is our collective work as a species that's really going into it. I don't know if that adds any value to anything anyone's thinking about, but do you see what I mean? How it's a qualitatively different resource.
And I think that was probably the reason that you saw the legal industry jump as quickly as you had, because this is the first time that we've been able to kind of have this model based on language, not on keywords, not on database structure, you know, not on organization of the information, but just, you know, taking it as messy as it is and finding out, you know, the results can also be messy because of it. And maybe this is a little off from your point, the thing that I'm hearing over and over and over again is that for this to really work, this has been the overnight 25-year problem. Law firms' data is super messy. And in order for us to really take advantage of this with our own information, we've got to start cleaning it up. And my hope is that we'll be able to leverage the resources that are coming out from the LLMs and the way to integrate that. And again, in going back to your, it's a lot easier for it to input information than it is to export information. Being able to leverage that in a way to standardize, to normalize the information is going to be huge. And I don't think it's going to be easy. I think it's going to be a struggle. Somebody's going to figure it out. But right now, everyone knows we need to do it, but we don't know really how to start. So maybe that'd be your next startup for us.
I think it's given us the opportunity to be a little more introspective because, we've seen, based on these models that, what all of our sort of knowledge is it's not always so great. There's bias and, maybe these hallucinations are kind of based on the information that it's getting. And, I think there's a real opportunity to sort of look at this, it's like, yes, it's incredibly powerful, but, are we doing it the right way? Yeah. Is the output right? Are we taking care of everybody's rights who might be touched by this? And, sort of looking at it as like, okay, we can do it. Should we do it? Or if we should do it, how should we do it?
Well, and to take your
Silicon Valley, we did it. What happens if we do it 10 times bigger? Let's find out. And that's our version of that.
Yeah. And just to kind of to wrap it up, going back to the oil analogy, you can get, you can get oil out of the sand tars or tar sands in Canada, but it's really complicated and hard to clean that up. Whereas, if everything was a nice light, sweet crude that you get from, from the North Sea or from Saudi Arabia, be a lot easier there. But those are limited resources, so we'll see what we do with our resources.
It's great talking to a Texas man, he'll immediately.
Yeah. I was gonna say, you can tell.
No, I think that's right. And that we don't know what the most powerful models are trained on, right? We don't. But I will say that at some point, once it's enough, it's like are things that different? If like, oh, we did this and nothing, right? Bracketing like the copyright and all that stuff, right? I think at some point it's such a huge mass of language that I don't know how much it matters what the precise contours are, I guess. But so we are, so there's a few things going on. We're building out the ability to build out AI, if that makes sense. And, it's one of these things where creating like a skills factory, if you will, right? The system by which you can start to do that. Now, what's frustrating about that is that it's not user facing. And so there's this delay where people are like, what's going on over there? What's going on is we're refining and iterating the process by which we can then create these new skills and these new functionalities. So that's a key aspect of it. We are then looking to, you're going to see generative AI enhancing current product lines. And that is, wonderful in its own right. But you're also going to start to see an assistant that can span multiple platforms. And that's what I think we're all most excited about. It's not an overnight system, but it really represents, I think, this like paradigm shift in what a piece of legal technology is. And that's where, that's a lot of work on this, getting it right. Every time there's a new task it does, there's like a risk of failure for that aspect of it. But I think that's the big picture. That's what's coming next. And don't get me wrong, along the way, you guys are no carers, dear to my heart, brief analyzers, right? So like you can, drag and drop a brief. The very earliest ones, right, were quote checker, right? You could check a quote. Then Caro, our stuff, it would suggest new cases. Now you have the idea is now what you can do is, are they fundamentally misrepresenting the case that they're citing, right? Or the transcript that they're citing? The idea of having a computer that can go through a brief and all of the supporting exhibits and case law and flag instances where they just don't seem to align. With this AI, I think there's two mistakes people make. Some people think, oh, it's a robot lawyer and it's going to take all the jobs. Okay, nonsense. But the other mistake is it's just going to be used for pedestrian things. It's just going to be used for administrative things. You know, it's just going to make declarations and stuff. And the truth is in the middle, right? You know, finding substantive discrepancies between what a lawyer has represented to the court and the evidence to support it, that is at the heart of litigation. I mean, that is, people do go to law school to get to do that over and over, right? It's not the most pure of motivations to want to smack someone else down, but here we are. So I think that, you know, products like that, like when I talk about enhancements to existing product lines, it's not just going to be like a chat bot that is a nicer interface. You're going to see like, you know, enormous expansions in capability of existing flows like Quick Check and other things like that.
Very cool. So, Pablo, we can't let you get out of here without asking our crystal ball question. And I know we've kind of touched on things, but let's pull it into one coherent response, if possible. So what do you see over the next couple of years when it comes to advancements in legal technology and legal research tools?
I think over the next couple of years, I would think you're going to, it's going to become much more ubiquitous because price is going to fall, speed is going to go up, right? So sort of the underlying hardware is going to make this something that's much, you know, in a lot more places. You're going to see entirely new client offerings, things that law firms never used to do, but are suddenly now involved in doing. And part of that perhaps to compensate for erosion of certain billing, you know, for around certain tasks. And I think you're going to see some, but certainly not like sci-fi versions of agentic behavior, right? Where the AI is able to go and complete tasks for you. I think that that's one of these areas where like it's very easy to do an early demo and say, oh, look, it's here. You know, oh, look, it went through Zillow for me. And, you know, yeah, I think to really get that to a reliable place will take time. But 2 years from now, I'd be surprised if you're not, you know, seeing some precursors of that kind of behavior. And then obviously the biggest caveat, which is like so much of this depends on who's right about the plateau of scaling up this technique. There are those who think we basically hit the plateau. GPT-5 won't be that different than GPT-4. And there are those who think that we're going to scale it up and see the same sort of quantum leap. And I like, tell me if you guys disagree, like what would it look like to have as big a jump to GPT-5 as what 4 was to 3, right? Think about just how insane it was when you first started seeing what GPT-4 could do. Now imagine in 2 months, there's another one of those, right? Mm-hmm. It could throw a lot of predictions out the window. You know, so yeah, that would be the most I'd hazard on a crystal ball.
Yeah. And what I'm seeing on the big advancements are more in the multimodal. And so more on audio, more on video, you know, multimedia. That's a huge jump. And I don't think people yes. really appreciate how big that jump is at the moment.
We prototype something. You can feed it an image of factory workers being negligent in various ways, and it's scanning it now. And then we use practical law content. So it's finding the precise CFR violations. So it's literally like policing the factory for OSHA right. violations. Yeah, very,
are you,
very
are you prototype. Using that picture of the guy that's using a forklift to change a light bulb?
Yes. Okay. Well, this is, I've got a forklift lifting another forklift. This is, you know, one, like so many great things with Evan Shankman at Fisher, who we partner with. And then near term, the context window is going to get a lot bigger. We're starting to see flickerings of that, which really matters, right? Because then you'll be able to feed a lot more information at once and have the AI synthesize and analyze, you know, like 10 different 100-page merger agreements. You can look at it all at once, which can then you can start to do like trends and things like that that aren't really as easy to do when you have to chunk everything. So it's just, guys, I mean, look, I was so excited about this technology in April of 2021 when all it was doing was making it a little better to find, you know, the cases and documents you're looking for. You can imagine the sort of like supernova of excitement right now. And so, you know, we're all in this together. It's again, not overnight, but it is decidedly not a fluke or like, something where like, oh, it just feels as though it turns out it wasn't really there. It is emphatically not that. And it's just now a matter of doing the hard work to put the guardrails and to bring it to bear.
Well, awesome. Well, Pablo Arredondo, Vice President of Co-Counsel at Thomson Reuters. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming in and celebrating your one-year anniversary of Co-Counsel with us.
Thanks, Pablo.
Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure.
And of course, thanks to all of you, our listeners, for taking the time to listen to the Geek & Review podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I could be found on LinkedIn or on X at GayBauerM and on Threads at MGayBauer66.
And I can be reached on LinkedIn or on X at Glambert or GlambertPod on Threads. Pablo, if someone wanted to learn more, where's your preferred place online for them to go?
Yeah, my email got a little bit longer. It's Pablo.Arredondo, A-R-R-E-D-O-N-D-O. I asked them, could I just have Pablo at Thomson Reuters? And they sort of looked at me and blinked and were like, dude, you just don't know what's going on. And I was like, all right. I'm not
nice
the
try,
only
though.
Pablo.Arredondo at ThomsonReuters.com. Always happy to follow up, talk shop, demos, whatever you guys want.
Okay. And as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thank you so much, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.